a video nasty. I wouldn't. I have far too much.
But how can you judge on video nasty? Oh, you've never seen one.
I actually don't need to see visually what I know is in that film.
My name's Christopher Brown. So the story goes that Jean Rollin is about to go away for the weekend when he gets a call on a Friday afternoon, it says, from the producers of this film, a guy called Daniel Lesueur. And he says, Jean, you've got to come on set on Monday. The filmmaker who's going to make the film, Jess Franco, has walked off and we're starting shooting Monday. We need a director. Can you do it? And Rollin says, yes. And this film, Zombie Lake, is the only film when it's released in the UK that Rollins has released in the UK, right? So, and almost certainly it's been released because of the zombie boom and all that stuff, because of, you know, Dawn of Death, etc. But it's a real shame, man, because like Jean Rollin is like a hugely talented filmmaker, a quite complicated filmmaker, and this film is like not his favourite. In fact, it's co-directed by him and Julien de Lasma, and they've kind of mangled their names together as J.A. Laser as a nom de plume for the director. And, you know, Roland didn't speak particularly fondly of it. It was a payday job. And indeed, if you look at his career, there are a number of payday jobs for him to be able to make the kind of films that he really wants to make, which are quite arty, cinema fantastique films, right? All of which is a shame, because this is the only one on the list I could talk to you about, because none of his other stuff is released on VHS in the UK at that point. Some of it might have been on Section 3 if it had been, to be fair, but, you know, Sexy Vampires and all that. But what we'll do today is talk a bit about Zombie Lake, how it came about, why it's the way it is, and then we'll talk a bit about Jean Rollin, how he came about, and what was he like. But Zombie Lake, personally for myself, is a good film, you know, not a good film, but an entertaining watch. It certainly looks a lot better than you think it would. And Roland does have a lot of talent in a complicated way, but certainly more so, I'd say, than Franco, although some people may disagree. But if we move forwards from that, clearly, I mean, there's acquired tastes and there's very bad, sloppily made films for fans of really bad sloppily made films, and this is definitely one of those.
Team of basketball players, women, just simply disappeared in the lake, swallowed up by some ghosts.
Let's level, Mayor. I hope you don't really think ghosts killed them.
Yes, that's what I think. In fact, I'm convinced of it.
Me? I didn't see them.
Do you think that if any one of us had seen those poor girls, we would have let them go out there and get killed? Don't you think we'd have told them to stay away from the lake?
We better face the fact that zombies have declared war. Our fate's now in our own hands. We must find a way to safeguard our town from the mad murdering zombies. We are not powerless. We must act.
Do you know who the man with the medallion is?
Yes, he's my father. The other ghosts, if you want me to. But I won't let you hurt him. I won't.
And he would like to be dead.
Okay, cool. So, right, French, made in 1981, in May, when it was released anyway. So the story's about a French village after the Second World War. And the villagers live next to a small lake, which they refer to, and I shit you not, as a Lake of the Damned, right? And women who go skinny dipping there tend to get attacked. And they get attacked by zombie Nazis, right? Who grab them and drown them. Buoyed with this, kind of the zombies get a bit more willing to get out the lake. They get out the lake and start attacking women on dry land. New events, not great. And the mayor of the town, who's played by Howard Vernon, who we've spoken about a few times before, and for many Jess Franco films, is not having any of it. Is unwilling to act until he's basically shamed into it. Anyway, there's a huge chunk of the film which is a flashback that explains what happened, right? So during the German occupation, a young Nazi soldier kind of gets involved with a local woman. This gets turned into a very awkward sex scene and they become closer, right? Anyway, so the soldier dies by gunfire, but beforehand he's aware of his that congregation between them. Has created a daughter called Helena. Anyway, once he found that out, the entire platoon is murdered by the village, and they're all dumped in the lake. Right? They become somehow in that process become zombies and absolutely called mayhem. And this is seen in two separate scenes. Our opening scene, where a skinny dipping woman is attacked by and pulled down by one zombie, and then that scene is basically replicated with an entire female basketball team. A little bit later on in the film. So the zombies are coming out the water and they are attacking people. And interestingly enough, they attack because very low budget, they attack in a similar way that they do in Oasis of Zombies, where they kind of just bite necks and drink blood rather than, you know, ripping entrails out and, you know, all tearing the flesh and all that good stuff that you see with Romero, almost entirely because there is zero budget. How do we know there's zero budget? Because Jess Franco, who could make a film on £2.50, said, there's not enough budget here, I'm not doing it, and left. But Roland agreed, right? Anyway, so we have a bit of like a weird kind of thing where there's like there's a zombie with a heart storyline, mainly around the relationship with Helena, with the daughter, his daughter. And in the end, the village get their act together, and we get to the finale. Okay, so and that's kind of it, right? So the film is so that sounds quite exciting, right? Sounds a lot like Shockwaves, doesn't it? Very much like Shockwaves, in fact. You know, zombie underwater baddies and all that. Nazis as well. And Shockwaves, if you've not seen it, is better than this film. Considerably better. If you want to, and indeed, when people speak about Zombie Lake, they compare quite considerably to the fact that it's surprisingly like Shockwaves. And the makeup is terrible. You know, you've got zombies coming up out the water with peeling, you know, plasticky appliances on their face. They're basically just being painted green. The outfits ain't great. The soundtrack is cobbled together by Daniel White from various other bits and bobs from other scores, and it is terminally slow. Like, I mean, there's a cup. The thing about like Oasis of the Zombie, right? Now, nothing happens in Oasis of the Zombies, right? That's its key problem, is it? It is a film where nothing happens in it. And there is stuff that happens in this. Roland, God love him, goes, this scene would be better, but consider this. What if we film her naked? I mean, he understands, you know, at the very least, you've got to provide something. And then, obviously, the attacks on women. There's all those kind of, you know, just obviously exploitive scenes where, you know, skirts get hitched up and all that stuff. And, you know, we've spoken before about Nightmare City where, you know, zombies seem incredibly good at ripping women's tops off. All that stuff. It's not quite that bad. But, you know, there's a lot of nudity in this for obvious titillation's sake. I think what is interesting is, I mean, you know, Roland didn't write the script, right? That was partly written by Franco, who, like, literally just fucked it off straight off. And, like, the script is probably better than a lot of Franco stuff. Certainly, like, the laziest, like, Eurocine stuff that he wasn't interested in, because he wouldn't have been asked about doing a zombie film. Like, it's for money, you know what I mean? So I think it's telling that, you know, you've got all this kind of subplot around shame of the war. I mean, it's oddly tonal. I mean, like, so you've got this, you know, obviously what would be very illicit, you know, you occupy a woman having a relationship with a Nazi soldier in occupied France ain't great from a standpoint. I'm a kid, ain't great. From a cultural side of stuff. And it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of seen like forbidden love, but it doesn't really care about too much about that. And then, like, you know, obviously it's a curse, man. They're cursed, aren't they? These zombies, they're damned, in fact, to walk the earth again. Like, almost like hell rejected them. It's not really touched upon. And if anything, the village seems to have been, you know, unfortunate in the, you know, why were you put in the decision to fight back against the occupying forces? Like, I mean, I'm not quite sure what it's trying to say. So it's reasonably complicated themes it's playing with. I'm not convinced it's doing it in a very intelligent way. And yeah, so like Roland's basically like, he just did what he was told. He's come on, sage, he hasn't had any work for it, and he's done what he's told. So there is a script there. It you know, it obviously exists because, you know, people like Nazis, people like zombies, exploitation, get the most out of it. And Roland is certainly willing to kind of to get into that. Roland by this point was effectively making films that he could, so he could make other films that he wanted to do. So, you know, this is after some of his probably best work. But he still had Living Dead Girl ahead of him. And then some of the later work, which kind of was a lot later, but, you know, Knights of the Clocks and Fiancé of Dracula, which kind of more is like, you know, remixes and allusions to earlier stuff, you know. But Roland's actual career... mix between basically being booed and chased by people who were just like offended by his stuff, and then like me kind of, you know, scrapping the money together by doing porn and stuff like that. So there are elements in this film which fit well with Roland's work, in particular, you know, rural France. Slow static shots. It looks nice. It's actually I think a lot of people, if you watched it when it was on VHS in the day, you'd be like, it's very muggy and very slow, and you don't really care about any of these characters, and the dubbing's awful. Now you look at it in French, which would be beneficial, you know, in Blu-ray or even that DVD, and it looks nice, man. It's a nice-looking film. You know, Roland knows cinema. And we spoke over the years about Joe D'Amato and his work. And D'Amato is a fantastic cinematographer. Roland is very much a very strong cinematographer as well. So he's known for four vampire movies, which are various quality but all very interesting. Roland's skills tend to lie in feeling off, dreamlike, kind of like very pretty shots. Dialogue that's reasonably poetic and the surrealism in there as well, and also having very strong female leads. The films were made reasonably cheaply, but felt luxurious. He's able to get a lot out of a budget. And because of that, he created things that were definitely worth looking at. So certainly from, you know, if you want a crash course through what to watch from Roland, Requiem for a Vampire, The Iron Rose, Grapes of Death, Fascination, and The Living Dead Girl, probably would have you covered with those five. There's others. So like there's four films he makes in a very short period of time about vampires. So Rape of the Vampire, New Vampire, Shiver the Vampires, and Requiem for the Vampire, all of which very high quality, but probably not the best of his work. So Fascination, Living Dead Girl, Grapes of Death, which is a more classic horror. All of those are definitely worth a go. They are playful films using surrealism and dreamlike states to really kind of push an unusual, flowing, almost obtuse narrative, you know. So like it doesn't all have to make sense. Now, when you talk about, like, you know, we've spoken about filmmakers who make horror in these kind of terms before. So, you know, when you talk about Jess Franco, at his best, he can be quite psychedelic. When you talk about Fulci, you know, certainly with the Gates of Hell trilogy, he is a filmmaker who does feel quite dreamlike and nightmarish in his imagery. So, like, Roland is in a similar kind of boat, right? So he's kind of similar, but it's even more so, right? It's like, it's real dream gothic, I suppose. I should trademark that phrase. Surreal dream gothic, and it's about, you know, castles and rural France, women, strong women at the heart of these storytelling. And like, load of it's improvised, and like the narrative just kind of weaves its way through. It's perfect for a late night, and you can just let it wash over you, and you're just looking at this like incredibly beautiful, very strange horror film. So his early vampire works, so 68 to 71, which are those four that we spoke about, very low budget. So Rape of the Vampire, and it caused a bit of a scandal. So the film was kind of like was meant to be in two parts, and meant to be like part of a wider series, but then got shunted together as a feature film and then released. And it did not do particularly well. And it was released during a period of riots. Lots of things conspired against the movie, and he got threatened, and he decided basically to kind of give up movies, but then didn't. So then you got like The New Vampire, and it played, which really kind of starts cementing this kind of surrealism. And then Shiver of the Vampires comes out, and the thing is, right, Roland's career is interesting, unusual pieces of film that kind of like, from a narrative point of view around him as a filmmaker, books end with phrases like financial peril, not, you know, nearly giving up, that kind of thing. It's, you know, he really only starts getting any kind of notoriety. And let's not fuck about it. Roland does not have a successful career as per se. He makes some, you know, he makes 20 odd films that are potentially interesting. Makes quite a lot of porn to try just to live, you know what I mean? But Requiem for the Vampire at least is one of his more successful low budget productions, which he made on fucking nothing. Fascinating thing about Requiem for the Vampire, nobody says anything for the first half of the film. Roland thinks to himself that he wants to make a movie that feels naive, you know, like feels basic and like simplify everything, so it's very core. You know, a low budget film that is purely based on cinema. You know, he has these incredible ideas, but this is still a bloke that 3 years before was effectively getting chased out the cinema by people at the premiere of Rape of the Vampire, because people were just like, this is outrageous, fuck you, and went mad for it, you know. So, like, his career after those films kind of is like these moments where, I mean, you know, we spoke about Iron Rose being like one of the ones to watch. Like, Roland self-financed that film. I genuinely believed he was going to bankrupt himself, you know? I mean, it's ridiculous. It's a great film, but again, didn't his reception is quite negative, and Roland just could not get money. At that point, he goes into adult sex films, particularly stuff like Schoolgirl Hitchhikers, which I think is available in the UK, Vertical Smile, that kind of stuff, and under a pseudonym, Michel Gentile, because he couldn't get the cash to make, you know, make the films he wants to make, right? But what he does manage to do is kind of group films together to make the films he wants. So, Lady Monique, which is like really slays towards erotic horror, to be fair. It's a story about sailors who rape two young women who then come back and make a pact with the devil to get their revenge. So, to give you some idea. And he's influenced by expressionism with that. So he makes like that, and he makes 75, he makes Lips of Blood, which is another vampire film, and L'Evrier de Sang as well. Both those films fail. So even though he's making these really interesting vampire movies, they fail. And then he goes, so he has to go back and make more adult sex films to try and, you know, just live. And this is kind of, he flip-flops between, you know, hardcore, particularly like in the mid-70s, just hardcore, and then like trying to do something like he personally thinks is interesting. So Grapes of Death, which is effectively a gore film. It's a violent, you know, if you're going to talk about the history of French horror, it jumps up as like, you know, Grand Journal kind of gore movie. So, like, but early on in that story, to be fair, like, for that stuff, for the French, they weren't doing that shit at the time. And obviously now you turn around, oh, yeah, fucking, of course, yeah, you know, there's new French extremity and all that shit. Fucking, you know, there's loads of that now, you know, Inside or Martyrs or whatever, you know. But to be fair, Roland, who, let's not forget, was roundly hammered constantly through his career for being garbage. You know, he's kind of like the forerunner for a lot of that stuff, you know. Grapes of Death's fantastic as well. It's really it kind of like, there's a lot of like scene, transition scenes and stuff, but it's a really, really entertaining movie, you know. It has its own pace, shall we say. But, and you need to kind of, but there's these really strong set pieces that kind of are littered through the film as we kind of, as our characters transition between different areas. So 79, he makes Fascination. I think, you know, which is mainly because he's able to get a little bit of money together to do it, because, you know, things, certainly Grapes of Death and stuff like that has done all right. And probably, you know, at that point, he's at the height of his career, I would argue. Certainly, Fascination is one of his best films, right? So he's at the peak of his career, and then he gets shafted by the distributor, and the film fails. It's like, fuck, hell. People do not want what Roland wants to sell him. I mean, you'd think after fucking 12 years of this, he would have worked this out by now, but no. And then, like, his career effectively flip-flops again between Zombie Lake, which is where this comes in, you know, as a gun for hire. And his career has moments of highlights, but generally is not, you know, particularly a renowned. So The Living Dead Girl comes out in 82, which, again, was made on fuck all. But he manages to come up with an interesting film, and that becomes quite successful. And then your mileage may vary in terms of his later works. During the 80s, again, he flip-flops between pornography and the films that he would be more interested in making. And indeed, even in the 90s, he kind of returns to these kind of themes because like, he's able to get a bit more money, and he made The Two Orphan Vampires, which is kind of like a reaction to Bram Stoker's Dracula. He wasn't a fan. I can get why, if I'm being honest. But, you know, that's that. Anyway, he died in 2010 after a battle with cancer. So as I say, if this is the only, if Zombie Lake's the only Jean Rollin film you've seen, like, I get why you would be like, nah, fuck this, this is ridiculous, this guy is fucking horseshit, this is awful. Particularly because the film is sold as a Rollin and it's not. Like, there's loads of his movies that he did under a pseudonym. Because he wasn't happy with them, to be honest with you. You know what I mean? So it's harsh to kind of, he's literally doing it because fucking needs to eat, you know what I mean? But have a look at Requiem for a Vampire. Have a look at The Iron Rose. Grapes of Death. Fascination. Living Dead Girl. Look at these movies. And like, you know, I mean, I think they're available on BFI Player, to be honest with you. There's certainly Blu-rays and DVDs of them. Just sit down, watch it. Let it wash over you. You know, it's perfect if you're, you know, it's a little late on a Friday night and you're just like, you're after something different and unusual, and you know, you don't want like some loud crash bang gore film or like an exploitation flick, although they are quite explosive, if I'm being honest. But you want something that feels different, man. Like, he, you know, Auteur gets thrown around a lot, but like Jean Rollin, it absolutely is his, it is a man with a vision, and he wants to tell a certain kind of story in a certain kind of way and be really different. And, I mean, fair fucks to him, you know what I mean? That is absolutely, you know, surely what we should be praising. Yeah, we should hold up the people who, you know, consistently try and do something different in the world. Anyway, thanks very much for listening. If you want to get hold of me, please do. My email address is christopher@thelasthorrorpodcast.com, or you can get me actually on my email address, which is videonastiespodcast@gmail.com. You can get me on Twitter @orange_monkey, or you can go to any of the websites, videonastiespodcast.com or thelasthorrorpodcast.com, and leave a message there. Next week, we're going to discuss Dario Argento's seminal film Suspiria, which we've kind of spoken about a little bit before because we've spoken around other Argento movies. This was the one that probably, you know, certainly broke him in America, and is potentially considered one of the best horror films of all time. We're down to like the last two best horror films of all time, but you know, so we've got this, and then we've got Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and then we are done with this podcast series. So we're kind of trying to end a little bit on a high, I suppose. So anyway, until I try and think of something new to say about Suspiria, take care and I'll speak to you soon. Goodbye.
never seen a video nasty. I wouldn't. I have far too much.
How can you judge on video nasty? Oh, you've never seen one.
I actually don't need to see visually what I know is in that film.